the devil awakens.
Maximus wrests his life from the underworld.
Hey boy, what in the world are you doing here?
He was elated with his escape.
I wanted out.
I set out now in a box upon the sea.
We arrive at the page together in this space that acts as a cushion and at the same time as a locked door and at the same time as an open window. Within, we find comfort and warmth. The outside is shut out. We have a view of the world we want to see, the world we permit ourselves to see. We arrive at the page together to write. The act of physically putting pen to paper, moving it along to create our messy versions of words, moving them into language, shaping them into characters, stories, vivid descriptions of places we have seen in our imaginations. I gathered us together for a way to give back a little, for a little bit more connection to my community, for a line on my resume. I got beaten back from the front lines and forced into the cocoon of student, humbled by their capabilities. I have not really emerged as teacher, rather, enabler is a better term. Just someone who opens the space, lets it be here so that they may come in. They are the teachers. They are the real writers. And here you will see why.
Hello, I'm David. I'm 16.
Where are you from?
I'm from Peabody, Massachusetts, and that's the thing I'll be reading is called Acceptance. The boys stacked them back now. They had fully realized the power of the opposite fire being transmitted by the Japanese. As their offense had turned quickly into a bloody defense. Sure, the words had traveled the rounds of the Japs' general recklessness and dedication to warfare, but the propaganda of the masses had spoken so different, they truly wanted to believe the latter. To assert themselves in the front line would be patriotic, yet dooming. These boys wanted to defend their assets, but not that way. Being considered heroic to millions and given a nice clean grave meant absolutely nothing when 6 feet in the ground, always insignificant. Heroism wasn't close to the mind of the boys, nor was the usual thought of protecting their friends. There was not a thought looming in their mind but self-preservation, and they all knew the only way to fulfill that was to do a great pullback, perceived cowardice aside. Suddenly, the fire seemed to die down a bit, and they could see the blue of the sky again. Their underestimation of the powerful enemy had destroyed their core, and if the inevitable was not done then, they risked a mass death even larger than the one before them. All ran away, and the land that they had fought night and day for suddenly meant nothing for them. The boys crowded in their quarters now, wondering where it had gone wrong, while knowing deep in their mind exactly what.
Okay, my name is Jody, but my age is of no consequence. The question was posed to me, why do you write? After some thought, I realize that there isn't a word or a description, at least one that is not known to me, that shapes that which exists deep within my core. I will tell you that when I write, the movement of my life ceases, time slows, and I find a place to be without the relentless pulling of people and responsibilities. Free to wander, I am another without limit, able to touch the sky. Nothing is impossible. I feel a pull of certain strength, a diversion. I create a life, a situation I can control. I become unfamiliar, yet my personality, experiences, and opinions seep through. I express myself, my thoughts, through the safety of the page without reprieve or condition. Writing is always there in the shadows. Words, phrases, ideas trace my ears and seed my thoughts. Language affects me, a permanent mark, an earned scar of sorts, running my fingers along its rise and remember. I process color, pain, joy and the like with words, formed to strengthen, project, and rid me of things I cannot understand or tolerate. My struggle is my inability to discipline, to complete each piece with the energy and intensity I began with. As it happens, negative thoughts begin to gain value, bombarding me with self-doubt. Heavy is the idea of uselessness, and yet I always return. I always write. I know it is what I'm supposed to do. Nothing else makes me feel this way. When I put pen to paper, when I move words to share a written piece, I am left open and vulnerable. I am offering up a part of me that encompasses my very being. I allow the outcome, positive or negative, to others. I find this often difficult to move past, yet the satisfaction given feeds my passion, followed by the most intense feeling of freedom unsurpassed by nothing else I know or have known. Words have become my dearest friend and confidant. They speak to me. Come over here, sit down, drink some tea, tell me secrets, your joy. What troubles you? They are my voice, often my escape. It is as a bird's song, a spider's web, or a lion's roar. It defines and enables the part of me others cannot see. I find I am able to bury the past, dream my future, imagine, create, become. Writing, like a fingerprint, is unique to its creator, as unique as the observer's senses and language, concrete as experience, achievements, and reality. Mere words evoke recollections, impact imagination, all in the world the writer shares with the reader. I gather myself in many facets, sharing with the reader, leaving me bound to them forever. If they are even minutely struck and remember anything I have lovingly expressed. I hope that I have given you an understanding of what writing is like for me. If so, then too will you understand why it is that I write. And I wanted to take a moment to express my deepest thanks to the Writer Center and to the ever-patient Charlie for giving me direction, for lighting up all the places that were dim, for opening me up so that the words seem to choose themselves.
Okay, this is called Paradise. They stayed in the front. Now they began to contemplate moving to the back. They moved from front to back rather frivolously, as a blade of grass wearing a zebra skin necklace trying to attract a mate might do. The boys had abandoned the concept of time in an attempt to discover true spiritual enlightenment. However, it was in approximately half-hour intervals that they moved. It was with this front-to-back pattern that they remained for eternity, never stopping for so much as a sip of water or a bite to eat. But from the front and the back of where, you might be asking? Not even the boys knew where they were, perhaps due to the seemingly year-long effect of a drug called paradise. They constructed a rainbow swing set on which they would enjoy swinging and swinging for days on end. When asked to come in, they laughed and snarled and sat atop an old creaky stool, threatening to cut off the legs for martyrdom of their rainbow swing set. But, much like the blade of grass wearing a zebra skin necklace, desperately trying to attract a mate, they knew they would have to come in at some point. But not now. Please God, not now. For the sake of cellular memory, for the sake of Mesopotamian vases, for the sake of Romanian poetry, for the sake of Rosalind Russell, Agnes Moorehead, Joan Crawford, Richard Burton, Clarence Thomas, George W. Bush, Ayn Rand, and L. Ron Hubbard. Not now. Please, God, don't make me go in now. Just let me swing on my rainbow swing set for just a little while longer.
I write for release, energy that builds within, for emotion, happiness, sadness, fear that pours out. I write for vision, seeing thoughts become written words, for challenge, making a character come alive. I write for discovery, finding a different part of me hidden among the lines, for understanding life and relationships. I write for satisfaction, accomplishing the task. For pleasure, doing something I enjoy. I write for me, that I may grow. Thank you, Charlie. in 2010, an article appeared in a newspaper for a vacancy for hangman in a third world country that I know very well. The resignation of a hangman. He knew it was time to quit the job when the nightmares started. But even then, he refused to accept the ugly truth. So many nights he struggled with sleep. Tossing and turning in his bed, he prayed for the silent void of a sound sleep to engulf him and relieve him of the troubled thoughts and ghastly images that constantly haunted him. Overcome by exhaustion, his body would eventually succumb, but seldom did his mind, and sleep had become a terrifying ordeal. Night after night, he writhed in his bed, sheets wet with the sweat of his fevered mind. He could no longer silence the screams that rang in his ears or quieten the tears of the anguished souls that refused to release him from this torture. Tonight was no different. When sleep did come, so too did the nightmares. Always the same hell, the same cold prison cell, his bloodied hands gripping the steel bars that imprisoned him and held him captive to his own conscience. He could feel the coarse, lice-infected rag of a blanket against his naked flesh. He gagged on the sour stench that came from the hole in the corner of the cell that served as a toilet, and he could hear the whispered prayers of each condemned man. Sleep, so elusive at first, then dragging him deeper and deeper into a river that flowed red with blood, and he felt like he was drowning as he thrashed about to save himself from being sucked into its cloying depths. Then, reaching the river bank, he clawed his way through mud and blood and gore. Suddenly he awakened, panicked and trembling. He sat upright as the bile rose quickly in his throat. With his hand tightly covering his mouth, he lurched down the hallway, reaching the toilet just in time to spew the bitter guilt that churned and erupted inside him. His throat and nostrils were burning as he heaved and heaved. He crouched on the cold tiles of the bathroom floor for a long time before shakily coming to his feet and shuffling to the basin. He doused his face and head with cold water and rinsed his mouth of the acrid taste. Feeling weak and leaning heavily on the basin, he did not recognize the pale-faced stranger who stared back at him from the mirror. The eyes were sunken and devoid of expression, the cheeks hollow and drawn. Fearing sleep and the recurring nightmares, he did not want to go back to bed and instead made his way to the kitchen. His mouth was parched and he wanted a drink of water. He needed to still the images that raced around in his mind. He needed to make sense of it all. He knew the time had come to face the truth before it destroyed him. So many innocent men had been condemned to death. Their only crime was standing up for what was right and speaking out. But these brave men had been accused of treason by a corrupt government and sentenced to hang. Each decree had been signed by a despotic megalomaniac, but it was he who was their executioner. He who had put each man to death. When he looked into their eyes, he had seen their forgiveness, and he was shamed. This is the 21st century, he thought to himself. Yet in this small corner of the world, murder and mayhem go on unabated at the hands of a crazed dictator who has so skillfully kept it hidden from the rest of the world. And I am the enabler. I am his hatchet man. The house was quiet as his family slept on, unaware of his pain. He sat in the darkness, the only light coming from a shaft of moonlight that shone in through the kitchen window, across the room, and spilling in a pool of radiant light on the floor beside the basket where the dog lay, curled up and sleeping, undisturbed by his increasingly frequent nightly visits to the kitchen. On the countertop in front of him was a framed photograph of his two children. The colors faded to a soft hue by the moon's rays. Reaching out, he touched each smiling face. His daughter, now 9 years old, protective of her little brother, holding his hand, both smiling at the camera. Looking at his son, his thoughts turned back to a day, a long time ago, and he remembered his own father and the little boy who idolized him. His father was hardworking and provided well for his family. a quiet, serious man who liked to spend the weekends reading, working in the garden, or fishing in the bay. Usually the family ate breakfast together, but then sometimes his father would leave the house long before sunrise. One morning, he had woken to the sounds of his father moving around the house, and he watched from his bedroom window as his father, wearing a black suit and carrying a briefcase, walked quietly to his car. The changes in his father's routine were puzzling. These were the only times his father wore a suit to work or needed a briefcase, and as soon as he returned home, he would lock the briefcase into the safe in his office. With all the innocence of youth, he had thought that since his father was leaving so early and would be gone all day, perhaps he had packed a lunch into the briefcase. Sandwiches, a flask of tea maybe. That night, at dinner, he asked, "Daddy." "Yes, son." "I saw you leaving this morning. Where did you go?" he asked. "I had an important meeting to attend." "Why did you leave it? Why did you leave when it was still dark?" "It was a long way from here," his father answered abruptly. And he was unable to say anything else as his father pushed his dinner plate away, his meal uneaten, and he left the room. Not long after that, he arrived home from school one afternoon to find his father's car in the driveway. He was surprised as it was one of those suit and briefcase days, and his father was home earlier than usual. He was even more surprised to find the briefcase on the kitchen table, and as his father was taking a shower, he could not resist taking a peek inside the briefcase. There was a notepad and pens, and a lot of important-looking documents with stamps, seals, and signatures. And as he moved the papers around, he saw a piece of black cloth. He held the cloth up in his hands and realized it was a hood, a loose-fitting black hood with two holes cut out for the eyes. He was confused. He did not know what it meant, but it scared him nevertheless. He was still holding the ominous-looking hood when his father walked into the room, and he had been frightened by the dark look on his father's face as he took the hood from him and returned it to the briefcase. Together they sat at the table while his father quietly tried to explain where he went on those mornings when he left so early and why he needed a black hood. Now, all these years later, he remembered it like it was yesterday. His father's gruff voice, despite his faltering words. Then, almost pleadingly, his father had said, "Someone has to do the job, son. These are murderers, bad, evil people. I don't like it, son, but someone has to do it." "But why you, Daddy? Why you?" he had said, and he had seen the despair in his father's eyes at hearing those words from his own son. Did he want to have the same conversation with his son? A wave of nausea swept over him at the thought, and he shivered in spite of the sweat beading his brow. He raked his hand through his damp hair and felt the sting of tears as he thought of the hurt and the pain that had stayed with him and his father for so many years afterwards, the awkward silences born of the knowledge that they shared an unspeakable secret. How then had he become indifferent and accepting of something so awful as to eventually step into those same sullied shoes, convincing himself it was okay, just a profession, like anyone else. Back then, the men who sat on death row had all committed the most heinous of crimes, and his anonymity had made the job easier. Few people knew who the hangman was, always arriving under cover of darkness, secluded until the time, only seeing his victim a few brief minutes before the job was carried out. Always in hiding, and hiding from himself, from his own reality, and it had finally caught up with him. Everything had changed. These were not hardened criminals anymore. Now he worked for an evil, barbarous dictator and would soon be ordered to put yet another innocent man to death, and it haunted him day and night. He could not escape his past, but he could prevent another righteous man from going to the gallows for defending his basic human rights. As dawn was breaking and the sky paled, he looked out at the new day, and he knew what he must do. He would bear these atrocities to the eyes of the world, and he would be the voice for all the tortured souls that begged and cried out to him night after night, and he would no longer fear them.
Okay. I have no comment on my sitting or standing. it's a nice chair. Well, I have the other piece, the why I write one.
This is Ryan.
Oh yeah, I'm Ryan. I'm 17. I'm from Peabody, as those two are.
But you also brought all these guys here.
Yeah, I brought the
Peabody guy.
Yeah, I keep bringing people, and they keep on not coming with me anymore. And I think that's my fault, not you guys. they came. Yeah, no. There were others. There should have been more. But I've been here since it started. Or okay, good. I don't know if it started before I showed up or. All right. Well, this is why I write this right here, but it's not as comprehensive as I'd like it to be. It's a little messy, but I'm gonna see if I can do it anyways. All right. Actually, first, I'd like to thank Charlie for being such a wonderful instructor and teacher and helpful, friendly food provider.
Thanks, Ryan.
I'd like to Peter. I didn't even expect him to be here. I thought you actually dropped off the face of the earth. But he actually first recommended that I come here. So, man behind the reason I'm here. And, Henry, you run this place, correct? And in between the two of you, I thank you both for having such a wonderful establishment. We need more of these. But, yeah, without any more procrastination. March 23rd, 2011. I vividly remember waking up to find Harrison standing dead center of the room we shared, with the lights on at 2 in the morning. And afterwards, asking if he was okay, hearing a frantic account of how he believed the world would end with a church steeple. On and on he went for the better part of 2 hours. He became so upset that two nurses had to move him to a new wing for the rest of the night. And for the better part of the next day. So I sat on the bed, a little shaken, but I wrote his story down. In the least, it was very interesting. You always remember the first time. For the last week or so, I had been in the care of a full-time psych ward, a danger to myself, they said. But it wasn't a total waste. In the library there, I found Hemingway in the same way that most find God. With at least 20 pages missing, along with the back cover, I absorbed The Sun Also Rises in a matter of days. And taken by the words and how they moved with rhythm like music, in the same way, I began dancing. From there, I found a certain spirituality in the word, in my words, my own words. Every cliche and stupid metaphor, every pretentious aspiration and moment spent with a pen. If nothing else, it clears up the clutter. My sun also rises. That's all I got there. But, where's the other one? Here we are. Not quite as long as the others. But, I hope it's... I hope you like it. Just about that time, a strange thing began to haunt me. It was this. I had forgotten something vital. I could only remember as the plane's landing gear retracted and we began gobbling altitude, climbing higher and higher still, that my fish Hampton had no food in his tank. And I would only be a few days, so naturally it was highly unlikely that Hampton would perish over the ordeal. But I can only imagine what he was thinking in that little bubbly brain of his. And I can only imagine that while Hampton would still be alive, he would not be very pleased with me when I got home. He'd be quite upset. Jesus, maybe I should send a postcard. One with a picture of Lake Superior on it. I bet he'd imagine himself swimming in that big lake. He'd probably like it quite a bit. And I'd have a blimp, full of the little fish flakes to fly over, and it would be like a snowstorm. Children would have the day off, schools. Children would have the day off school. Couples would catch the flakes on their tongue, and old men would grumble as they shooed the mess away by the shovelful. There'd be a state holiday dedicated to it, all for him, to drive the point and to make sure with absolute clarity that I was sorry, that it pained me to think that I'd pained him, because the devil is in the details. What may on paper seemed like negligible cuts a bit deeper when taken into consideration that he'd been right there every night for me, listening to my troubles, filling the room, tying it together, really. And I forgot to feed him. I began feeling sick, dizzy, my stomach in knots. Everything he provided, and I burned that bridge with the quick flick of a match. And my little goldfish, my little girl, one misstep was not the end of the world. But I apologized. You remained bubbling and silent, filling space and asking for food. That's all.
Hello, I'm Maureen Cusimano, and I'm in Charlie's girl class, I guess. Why do I write? Writing is an outlet for me, an outlet to express myself. I can make up a virtual life, a virtual family, or virtual events. Made-up characters or real-life events unfold on paper. I am the only one in complete control. Nothing happens in my story unless I want it to. It is a challenge for me to find the words that will best describe the scene and the feelings that I am trying to convey to the readers. Waking up my brain, which has been on hiatus for many years. Refreshing lessons on the English grammar I thought for sure I would never use. I may never be a published author. Despite that, I will keep writing because I can. Whether it is fiction or nonfiction, I can use words on paper to release my inner turmoil or to make up a virtual life. Thank you. And now I'm going to read The Turtle Tent Adventure. Caden is awoken by her mother from a restful sleep. It's time to get up, sleepyhead. Mama, do I have school today? Caden asks. No, silly. Today you are going to visit Nana. Yippee! Caden quickly jumps out of bed and dresses to go. She runs down the stairs yelling, Mom, I am ready to go. Mom takes one look at her and tells her, I think you forgot something, little one. I think you forgot to comb your hair. It is a little messy. Caden sighs and looks at her mother with her big blue eyes, pleading, Do I have to? Yes, you do, and brush your teeth while you are upstairs. Caden's dirty blonde hair is wavy and gets snarled very easily. Mom told her she needed to comb it every day if she wants to keep it long. It hurts sometimes when it gets knotted up, and she does not like to comb it. But if she doesn't, Mom or Nana will comb it, and it really hurts then. Caden goes back upstairs and combs her hair and brushes her teeth. Descending the stairs, she shouts out, I'm ready to go now. Mom grabs her car keys and says, Let's go. Nana always tries to plan fun things to do with Caden. One day she was going through a catalog and found a turtle tent. It was a small dome tent made out of nylon. The turtle body was green with octagon-shaped yellow spots on the outside. There was a round tunnel on the side with a cover. The cover was a face that had big eyes and a happy smile. When Nana decided to buy the tent, she did not intend to tell Caden that the face could be removed and used as a frisbee. That is for outdoor play. The top of the tent was black mesh for air. The floor was black, and there were four nylon tabs on the bottom that were shaped like turtle feet. Nana thought it was perfect. It was great for both girls and boys. She knew that Caden would have fun with it. Her other grandchildren were coming next week for a visit. She knew the two boys would love sleeping in it. It would be easy to assemble. It just required two poles and went up very quickly. It would be a surprise. Caden arrives at Nana's house. She quickly gives her mother a hug and a kiss goodbye. Caden turns and notices a big green tent in the middle of the living room floor. Puzzled, she asks, Nana, why do you have a tent in your house? Caden has gone camping with her parents and slept in a tent outdoors. They have never set the tent up in the house. Nana tells Caden, I thought it would be fun to camp in. Camp in? She has to think about that. Look, it has a tunnel on the side where the happy face is. You can crawl in and out of it. Just then, Nana's cat came running out of the tunnel. I guess Kitty wanted to play too. They both laughed at that. Nana goes to get breakfast and leaves Caden to explore the tent. When she is through, she asks, Honey, would you like to eat breakfast in the tent? Could I please, Nana? Nana places her breakfast on a TV tray and opens the front flaps of the tent. Caden cannot believe she can watch her cartoons while eating breakfast. Wow, Mom and Dad never let her do this at home. After breakfast, Caden shouts with excitement, Nana, come play with me. Nana laughs. She cannot resist her granddaughter's excited request. She brings the Barbie dolls with her into the tent. They spend the next hour playing with the dolls. The first thing is to pick out names for them. Jasmine and Sasha are nice names. Jasmine and Sasha are going to a party. They dress the girls up in their party dresses. Jasmine wears a purple and pink sparkly one-strap short dress with pink and silver heels. Sasha has a blue sequin short dress with blue sandals. Nana turns on her stereo. They need music for the party. It is a girls-only party. Ken is among the missing. Jasmine and Sasha dance all over the tent. They are tired from the party. Jasmine and Sasha put on their PJs and go to bed. Caden wants Nana to read to her. Nana always reads to her. She brings books that she knew the kids would like. They sit in the tent and read about magic puppy adventures. Time flies by, and before long, Caden is hungry. It's lunchtime. Nana makes yummy turkey sandwiches with carrots and celery sticks. This is Caden's favorite lunch. I think we should have a picnic lunch in our tent. When they sit down to eat, Caden asks Nana, What do turtles eat? Well, that is a hard one. I don't know. Maybe tomorrow we can take a walk to the library and see if they have a book on turtles. Can we sit in the reading circle and read it there? I think that sounds like a great idea. I will put it on my calendar so we don't forget. After lunch, Nana tells Caden she has to clean up. You will have to play by yourself for a little bit. Do you think the kitty will play with me? I don't think she will, but you can ask her. Caden crawls in and out of the tunnel. She tries to get the kitty to play with her. Here, kitty, kitty, come and play with me. The cat, not wanting anything to do with playing, leaves the room. Nana, why won't the kitty play with me? Nana explains that Alicia is an old cat and does not feel comfortable around kids. She hurt my feelings. I am sorry. Why don't you color? Okay. Caden takes out her crayons and her coloring book. Caden is growing tired. She puts her crayons and coloring books away. She grabs her blanket and pillow and crawls inside the tent to watch her cartoons. Within minutes, Caden falls fast asleep. When Caden wakes up, her mother and sister have come to pick her up. Bethany is as shocked as Caden had been to see a tent in Nana's living room. Caden cannot wait to tell her sister all the fun that she and Nana had in the tent. Bethany is crawling out the tunnel and wanted to stay to play. But Mom says, Girls, it's time to go home. You can play with it another day. Caden asks, Mom, am I coming to Nana's tomorrow? Yes, Mom has to work tomorrow. Bethany cries, No fear, I have to go to school. The turtle tent is staying up. I am letting Cameron and Nicholas sleep in it when they come next week. Don't worry, Bethany. School is out next week, and you will have plenty of time to play in my turtle tent. Caden gives Nana a big hug and a kiss. I'll see you tomorrow, Nana, and don't forget, we're going to the library. Before I go, I'd just like to thank the people from the Writing Center for allowing us to use their space, for Charlie for dragging the words out of me and having more confidence in me than I had in myself and giving me the courage to stand up here. Caden, for all the material. and my family for showing their support, and everybody else. Thank you.
I set out now in a box upon the sea.